This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Welcome to another episode of Uncensored. And before Dan even tells me, I'm going to tell you that it's brought to you by gunbroker.com. Thank you to Gunbroker. Yeah, see, the jingle's catching on. It's catching on.
I literally just told you that 30 seconds ago.
No, you didn't. No, he didn't. Did anyone?
There was no telling of things. You just...
This is what it's like working at GoWild.
It doesn't count if you mention it off camera, I guess.
I didn't even know he was in the room. I have no idea what you're talking about. Anyways, as Brad Luttrell said, it was my idea to tell you that we are... brought to you by gunbroker.com. Thank you to Gunbroker for sponsoring this lovely show that you all show up to every week. And make sure you're checking them out for all of your refills on deer season, getting ready for waterfowl, getting ready for small game, whatever you're getting. Make sure you're checking out Gunbroker because they have some amazing prices and tons of new guns are sold through Gunbroker. It is not just used, so make sure you check it out. We're going to get into some interesting stuff going on locally today, like regionally, I would say. There's some interesting things happening with Kentucky, so stick around to hear that. But I think we got a little bit of a recap. There was some, a couple of us got out, did some outdoorsy things. I did hit up the suburban property. I was there 2 different days, and it was funny because my wife was like, why are you going tonight? But she's been really cool. She understands that I'm like in a mild depression at this point because I don't have venison, and I got myself here for passing on all these deers early in the season and these deer early in the season, and here we are. But so I was so determined that I went out in all that weather that was out on Saturday. And I felt real dumb.
No, wait a second. When you say all that weather, we need to clarify.
Yeah, I'm going to
tornado watch.
Yeah. Like, I took my son to a basketball game, and then we came back, and I looked at it, and I'm like, I'm looking at the radar, and I'm like, I think there's 90 minutes. I think there's going to be a 90-minute window. It's going to be good because the deer are going to be like, oh, my God, this is crazy. And then I could see on the radar that little section where I was going to be was going to get a break for about 90 minutes. Well, I went out there, and I go out. Something had hit my cameras. I go fix my cameras, and it starts lightning, like like ungodly. And I don't know if you guys do this, but I count because, you know, sound travels like
is
a,
that
you know,
true?
Yeah, well, I mean, sound travels at a it's like 300 feet per second or something like that.
500 feet per second.
Well, either way, I usually count just to get an idea for how close it is.
We had that same conversation.
900 feet per second.
Whatever it is.
We had this duck blind conversation looking at lightning, and someone's like, that's 7 miles away. And I was like, is that, like, I've always been told, is that true?
I think
the lightning count
I think it is, but I'm not sure. I think everyone thinks it's a second, but it's not actually a second.
Well, okay, either way, I was just like roughly counting it out, because if it's like 2 seconds away, that's really freaking close, right?
Yeah.
And so
that's definitely
so I get out there and it's like there's no gap. It's like, and I'm seeing the flashes and I'm like, okay, I feel like I shouldn't be here. Yeah. So I go back and sit in my car for 45 minutes, and I'm waiting on my gap, and I'm like, this is it. You know, the rain had stopped, there's like drizzle, and I've got all my rain gear on, and I go back out, and I get out and it proceeds to rain like the hardest I have ever been rained on.
Were you in the saddle?
No, God, no. I was not getting a tree.
That's
right,
call.
Yeah.
Tree, metal.
Yeah. Highest point. In
I just see like Lieutenant Dan and Forrest Gump in the storms, you know, and he's like riding on the crow's nest.
It would have been like that, man.
All you have.
Well, because there's not a lot of tall trees.
That's Truman Show.
You know, it's a, there's
a. That is Forrest Gump.
Yeah, he's like yelling at God.
Yeah.
And he goes and like swims into the
ocean. He also does that in Truman Show when they try to kill him in the boat.
But
have you seen Truman Show?
Heck yeah.
Okay.
But this property's like all little trees, and then there's the big trees around the edge that would have been hanging in. I'm like, no, that'd be stupid. So I go out and sit, and it starts coming down like you wouldn't believe. It's so wet that I can't even check my phone to see what the radar is. And so I sit there, and I'm like, okay, I need a break. I get a break, and it's just long enough to pull up my phone to realize that like it's coming back. And I'm like, oh my God, it's changed. The weather's changed. It's stupid. So I sat in it for like another hour, just getting doused. And I left with 90 minutes of shooting light left. And I get home, and I swear to God, like the does, I was just trying to get dough, because I am literally just on meat crisis right now. I'm panicking. And this 3 or 4 does come out, and they're walking right to where I was sitting. I'm like, son of a... So nothing. I texted the guys. I'm like, I am such an idiot. I should have just like, but I mean, it was lightning, and I mean, and it was close. So I mailed it in. Felt like deer meat wasn't worth dying for, which I still think was probably a good decision. But maybe I should have waited in the car instead of driving home. I then went back out the next morning and saw nothing. That's my story.
Yeah, it's. You're going to the cool part about this is you're going to shoot a buck and you're going to get a sick snow picture with a buck.
Did I tell you?
That's the bright side.
Well,
of this.
I don't know if I sent it. I think you were on the thread. Did that big beefy buck that showed up?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the one, but his body is massive. Huge. Like he looks like he has little legs.
Yeah.
But what's funny is I couldn't see his antlers because the something hit my camera and the camera was sagging down. So all I can see is the base.
Yeah.
And it's like the tiniest amount of base, but I'm like, it's definitely a, well, if you see this, you're like, there's no way it's not a buck.
Oh yeah.
But beefcake, but he showed up like three, he's nocturnal. And I'm like, I don't know if he's coming back. I don't know. I just, at this late season game, I'm not used to it.
Yeah.
So I have no idea what I'm doing. I feel like I'm starting over in deer hunting right now.
Well, so it's totally that same different. Spot that's close to you that I said, I saw a buck. I saw it again. I don't know, midweek last week. So they're still moving in daylight.
Yeah.
Might luck out.
Well, that's what I told my wife. I'm like, I just got to be there. Like, they're unpredictable right now, and I can't kill them here. Like, I just got to keep putting in time, and I know it sucks, but, I mean, what makes me feel really dumb is, like, I passed on a probably 180-pound doe multiple times earlier this season because it was just hot, and I didn't want to deal with it, and I was like, got to be somewhere afterwards. And then Jacob, late in the season, was like, you know that processor's right down the street. And I'm like, oh God, no, I forgot about that. Like, I would have totally bagged a few.
Cut to Brad next year and you're like tagged out in like week one.
You're
going to be like, boonk, boonk.
Yeah.
Boonk,
well, boonk. What's funny is I got offered to go hunt on this big farm near here because of this. My wife was complaining to another school mom and she's like, this is just Brad's screwed himself. He's not getting, you know, he's kind of missed his opportunity.
We're going to starve.
Well, she was like, oh, he can come hunt with my husband. And I was like, I don't really want to hunt somewhere else now. Like, I've figured this out. And so now I'm just kind of committed, but I'm like, I'm going to get out there early next year. I'm going to kill one in September.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or at least like early October. 'Cause they were freaking patternable, man. I mean, it was like I told you guys, it's like a TARC bus dropped him, a Metro bus dropped him off. So,
hate it for you.
How was duck hunting?
It was tough.
And this was your second time duck hunting?
So, yeah, this is that quota hunt. That
we did an episode last year on this hunt, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a quota hunt. There's four of us. It's like me and Derek, and then one of his high school / college buddies. They went to college together, and then one of the guys that they met at college is the same group as last year. So I'm buddies with them now. It's cool to see them again from last year. But the way the quota hunt works is if one person, we all four put into the draw. If one person gets drawn, then you get to bring three people. So, and then if you don't get drawn, you get a point. And so the way the system works is, like, I've now put in for 2 years and not get drawn. I'll have 2 points coming into next year, and there's a good chance I'll get drawn. And it kind of, this cycle kind of starts. Well, this year we got drawn twice. Two of the guys in the group got drawn. So we went to our first hunt this past weekend, but we're also going to get to go in, like, mid-January. So we get two shots at this place. This week is actually the first week of the actual draws. And so they started hunting Wednesday, and so it was Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we got drawn Saturday, Sunday. And so there's been guys out there hunting all these different spots, and it's Ballard is the name of the place, the property. There's a huge duck refuge right next to, like, the draw spot. So whenever you get done hunting, you get to drive past it and see, like, do we just suck, or were there, like, not that many ducks in the area? So the we got down there Friday night. We had this, like, nice house that we got on, Derek got on VRBO or whatever, that was 20 minutes away. And we all got down there Friday night, woke up Saturday morning, went out, and you go to, like, this station where they do this literal, you go up there, you sign in, and they give you a pill with a number on it, one, two, however many draw groups there are. And then there's a standby group as well. And so the way they manage it is there's tons of blinds just, like, already built. There's, like, cage blinds, pit blinds. There's walk-ins, which are literally just you walk into a field and there's a body of water or whatever. And so you go in, you give them your, you know, information, and they give you a number. Then they put it in a little thing. They roll it around like bingo, and they pull out a number. And then you get to go up there and pick, you know, I want, you know, unit 99 or unit 105.
Do you have, like, whatever, a redneck Vanna White? that's drawing the number.
You could call David that. Yeah. They're super awesome there. Like, it is such a well-managed place. It's awesome. You go up there, and then they draw your number, and I'm the only one that cheers every time. Like, I was embarrassing them last year. Like, it's 3 or 4 something in the morning, and, like, we get drawn, and I'm like, woo!
So yeah, there's a bunch of other people in there. Yeah, you guys don't
like
know.
It's like cheering, like, at the DMV.
All, like, tough duck hunter dudes, yeah, like, all ready to go tear them up, and I'm in there
eating their sausage biscuits.
Yeah, literally, yeah. And I spanked Derek one time.
Oh, dude.
On one in front of everybody. He turned around and, like, looked at me all pissed off. And
surprised they still invite you.
I know. It's, I got the points now.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
In.
Yeah.
And so they, but yeah, so we actually got drawn, I think it was third the first day and, like, fifth the second day, but we got our number one spot the first day and our number two spot the second day. You basically, like, look at all the spots that are available. You go through the map and you pick out, like, yeah, I want to go here, there, whatever. And since we had some pins from last year's hunt, Derek had kind of a frame of reference, and he went out and hunted North Dakota, which there was an episode on that too. I believe we did one on that. Mm-hmm. If not, he absolutely, like, slayed for a week out there. They were having to eat ducks because their possession limit was so high that they wanted to kill ducks the next day. And so, like, he's kind of got this whole thing figured out a little bit. And Kentucky's just not a fantastic place to duck hunt. And Ballard is arguably one of the best places.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're in the best area.
The farthest west part of Kentucky. I mean,
closest to that flyway, right?
Yeah, which is closest to the flyway. And so it's super early season. We knew it was going to be tough. The first day we go out, there's a pit blind, and you're supposed to be, like, right there on the water, but they hadn't been flooding the fields for that long, so it was too far off the water. So it was right next to a cornfield that they're starting to flood, and there's, like, a pretty good chunk of water, not near as much as the map had shown. And so we got there, looked at the pit blind. Derek's like, this isn't going to work. Like, we got to go find somewhere else. So we, like, walked through the water and went to the other side and set out all the decoys and everything. And we just stood and, like, kneeled and sat in the mud in a cornfield. And it was, it was cool. Like, for me, it's always cool. Like, I don't see ducks all the time. And so I'm like, man, we're seeing a lot of ducks. And Derek's like, we're not seeing a lot of ducks, dude. Like,
yeah.
Out in North Dakota, they're, like, hunting just holes full of ducks. And they're like, oh, that's a diver. We're not going to shoot that duck. Like, out there, we're like, anything that is a duck is getting shot. And we had these new – Derek bought all these Boss Bismuth shotgun shells, which bismuth is apparently like best of the best type stuff. And we're joking that we're going to be able to shoot them like way, way out. We're going to sky blast and kill all these ducks and all this stuff. And I shot 4 shells that day. I think Derek shot 2 or 3, Bardo shot 2 or 3, and Quentin shot 2. And of the 2 Quentin shot, he shot the only duck we shot that day and the only duck we shot on the trip. It was tough, man. Like, we were kind of close to the woods, so we had these one ducks that would, like, they would kind of buzz behind us like fighter jets, like super fast, and then kind of circle around and buzz in front of us super fast. So they'd just be like cruising, and we'd be like, and like not even, like, we're shooting way behind them probably. And none of us had shot these shells before, so we didn't really know how much to lead them and all that. But the one that Quentin shot was one that came in and landed. It was a diver duck, and it landed in a flooded field, which they don't do that. Like we kind of cleaned up the gene pool because this was a super dumb diver duck. Like, he came and landed, and Bardo was like, I'm going to go try to, I think he called it like jump shoot it, where you kind of go over there and you like sneak over and then you jump up and shoot it like when it takes off, when it sees you. Well, he got over there and it jumped up and flew and flies like over Quentin's head, and he sees this thing, and I'm like, you know, you have to stay within 25 feet of each other, so we're real close. And I see this thing flying, and he sees it too. He just tracks it, and like right above him, like 12 feet off his barrel, it's just like, doof, shoots this thing, folds it right there. It was really cool. That's what duck hunting is like most of the day, in like really cool spots with a bunch of ducks. But so that was the only duck that we shot and killed. It was a ring neck, which Derek called a trash duck, a gumbo duck. Where they apparently taste horrible. He's like, don't tell your wife it's a trash duck. Just put it in the gumbo and put it in there with a bunch of like chicken and sausage, and it'll be all right. But
I've heard those divers aren't great.
Yeah, he said they're terrible. But I've never had one, and I would have eaten one if I got it, but didn't. So that was the first day. Then the second day, we went out and we were in this cage blind that was like really brushed in, super nice blind, really comfortable. We got to like sit on a bench, and we're in this like long flooded field, and there the flooded area was split in half into 2 units. And so there was a group of dudes that were like 200 yards away from us at the end, one end of the flooded area. We were on the other and had our decoys out and everything. And like before shooting light, there's ducks coming in, landing like in front of us and around us and in between where they were and we were. And Derek's like, so when shooting light starts, nobody shoot unless it's literally like a dead to rights duck, like it's sitting right in front of us and you're going to shoot it on the water, or like it is flying right up cupping, like giving itself up right there, because if they shoot down there before we do, it's going to push whatever ducks are closest to them right in front of us, and we're going to get to just light them up. And so we're sitting there, and it was kind of like a standoff, like neither one of us is shooting. We both know that they're like, both groups know there's probably ducks. And so apparently they had good chances at ducks, and they shot before us, and exactly what Derek said, a bunch of ducks come flying by and we're like, wah, 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 none of us hit anything. Like, yeah.
When you say a bunch of ducks, like what would you guess? How many?
I mean, at a time there would be like groups of like 6 or something like that. I mean, I don't know. That's definitely, I mean, it's not a bunch. All these duck hunters are sitting there like, you're an idiot, laughing at me, I guess. But it was what it was. And when we drove by the refuge, there was like hardly any ducks either. I mean, they're just, it's super early in the season. There was like, it was 60 degrees the first day. Second day was, there was a cold snap. It was like getting down into the 30s. But talking to Bardo, he's like, you really need it to like drop off and be cold for a few days,
like,
and
this weekend
like when the water's starting to lock up and they're like kind of, they're moving a lot more. But the cold snap, he was saying, probably pushed a lot of the ones that were there down south, because the first day there was way more ducks in the refuge than the second day. And then the second day we like drove up, and you have to drop this little card off to say how many times you shot, because they do all these statistics at the check-in of like, you know, shots per dead bird and, you know, total shots fired and all this stuff that they do for their surveys and stuff. And when we got there, another truck got there, and they had a boat. And one of the dudes was walking up when Derek was walking up to the little, like, mailbox to drop the cart off. And dude, naturally, he's like, how'd it go? And he was like, you know, not great. And, you know, we shot a few times and didn't shoot anything. And the guy was like, yeah, we didn't even fire a shell. So they took their whole boat, like, super nice, blind, all this stuff on the boat. Like, you could tell they had, like, an expensive setup. And they went out there, took it, didn't even shoot a freaking duck. So, or didn't even shoot one.
That's always nice, though, when you know that it's not just you guys.
Well, that's what the refuge kind of, like, gives that away of, like, if there's not a ton of ducks in the refuge, that means that there's just not a whole lot of them in the area. It was cool, though, because we got to see, like, some gorgeous Drake mallards that flew fairly close to us. So you could see, like, the green head, like, super orange feet, like, white belly. It was really, like, they flew real close on a couple where it looked like they were going to circle and land. And so you're, like, basically saying, like, hey, don't shoot unless they land or, like, are cupping up to land so that you have, like, a really good chance to shoot them. And we had some, like, iffy opportunities to shoot at them, but decided to wait because it looked like they were going to land. We're going to have better chances down the line, like, when they came back, hoping they would give us, like, a great chance at them. And so
bring some more in or something too.
Yeah, they were pretty close, but it still would just, I mean, it's just, your shot's not going super far and it's not lethal out super far. And so you're trying to be smart about the shots you take and stuff. So yeah,
I want to do it, man. It sounds fun.
Dude, duck hunting compared to deer hunting, like, deer hunting is fun for a different reason. Like, duck hunting is fun because it's you and the dudes in the blind. You don't have to be quiet.
Yeah.
Like, you're just sitting there messing around. Like, you know, it's just like a fun boys weekend.
Yeah.
Like, it was just chilling with the guys. We're eating venison and bear meat and, you know, hanging out at the house and whatever, shooting guns a little bit. Like, that part's cool. But for Derek, who's ruined by North Dakota, was like, this is horrible duck hunting. Like, this, we hardly saw any ducks. And so, yeah.
I feel like any kind of bird hunting is like a roller coaster level of fun. Whereas, you know, it gets like high energy. Like, when it's good, mm-hmm. you're getting a lot of cheap entertainment. And I don't want to say cheap entertainment. It's just like rapid fire. Dove hunting's like that too.
Yeah.
You know, when you're seeing them, it's insanity, and, you know, you're drinking beers, you're sitting around hanging out with your buddies, talking loud. You're not even wearing camo when you're dove hunting, but it's a lot of the same, like, vibe. But then deer hunting is like running a marathon.
Yeah,
it's like fun afterwards. Yeah. It's like you reflect back on it. You're like, that was great.
Yeah.
You fished this weekend, right?
Yeah, I went for a little bit. They just stocked the creek here in Louisville, Floyd's Fork.
Did you see that they're adding like a huge section of Broad Run? They just announced it today. They're like, they
got more land? Really?
A ton more land. I looked at it. It's almost, I think it's going to double the size of Broad Run.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, so they stocked it this past week, and the kids were kind of, they're already getting cabin fever, you know, cold and stuff. So we just tried to get them out that morning, and Liz wanted to take them on a bike ride. And she's like, but if you want to go fish, since they just stocked, go for it. So, of course, I jumped on that opportunity. As most weeks go, when they stock fish here, there's a ton of people within a 100-yard stretch of the creek. And so I maybe fished a 30-yard section of the creek and, hooked one pretty good size, like little stalker trout. And I stripped it in, you know, probably three or four times, and it got off the hook. So it was, I mean, a lot of pressure, water was still low. This rain we just got will help that, but, you know, really clear water and low is just tough.
So I want to move. Sorry about your fish. I want to move on. Yeah.
That's probably the smoothest transition you've ever done.
Wow. Yeah, it's real good. This is a professional show here.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't know if we were going to land one story.
At the end of every story, we should just be like, sorry about your duck. Sorry about your fish. Sorry
in other news.
Yeah. Sorry about your sad story there. Speaking of other sad stories, you were saying that, one of these may or may not be a sad story, depending on your perspective. One of them is definitely not a great situation, but I saw this too. Tell us about the CWD. Did you read that story?
Yeah, so Kentucky had its first confirmed case of CWD. And
was it two deer?
I think it was two deer, and I don't know if they were that, you know, some places on, along the border still have check stations. Mm-hmm. Certain counties you have to like check your deer. I don't know if it got picked up at a check station or if this hunter was kind of suspicious and voluntarily sent it in or had someone look at it.
I do think certain counties in Kentucky have some amount of testing they've been doing, because there's like two or three spots that they've been watching on the border. Was this out in Western Kentucky,
Southwest,
I'm guessing? Yeah.
Not too far.
Yeah, so there. I don't know if it was some hunter being proactive and being like, I shot this deer and it looks pretty sickly. Maybe it should be tested for CWD. But either way, it came back as positive. And I'm not sure if it was the same hunter with two deer, or I know it was two deer in the same county. But so it's starting to creep in, and that was something that Kentucky was kind of like the feral hog thing. Kentucky's been kind of lucky in avoiding.
Well, apparently we haven't avoided that. And, you know, it's interesting. I was reading about this, and Kentucky Fish and Wildlife doesn't want you to shoot them.
Feral hogs.
Right. And it's interesting. It reminded me of, I don't know if you guys ever listened, you know, our buddy Brandon Butler was on Meat Eater back when he worked at the Missouri Conservation. God, I'm going to butcher the, what was that group? Missouri Conservation. Anyways, Brandon worked with this group that was working on trapping the hogs. And the episode on Meat Eater, if I remember, it's the Judas Hog, and it's like episode 70-something.
I'm not even going to begin to guess.
Yeah, I feel like it's 77. You guys can tell me if I'm right later. But they talk about how the hunting was being counterproductive, and I kind of forgot about this, because when I saw that Kentucky Fish and Wildlife was asking people not to shoot them, I'm like, why? Wait, we don't want these things. Like, why would you not? But apparently the pig is so smart that the state was saying that every shot you take at one and miss, they get more aware of hunters and better at avoiding hunters, and it exponentially impacts their ability to trap them. Which reminded me of Brandon, though, with the Judas hog. Do you remember how that worked? Like, basically, is it the sounder? Is that what they call the?
I don't remember all the
sounder's
details.
The group, right? So, yeah. But the Judas hog basically is the one that leads
gives them up.
Yeah. And like leads them into the trap, right? Yep. And they have the, have you ever seen these traps, Brayden? It's like a trap that's like, it's not what you're thinking of, like with this big door that hammers down. It's like a spiral, if I remember correctly, that they kind of keep walking into, and then they get to a point where they can't get back out.
Like a corral kind
of? Yeah, kind of, but it's almost like a lobster trap concept where
so they can't work themselves.
They can
back
go
out.
In, but they can't get back out.
Interesting.
And the Judas hog is the one that like pulls the rest of them in, you know, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think the other thing with the pigs, have you guys ever heard of the cobra problem in India? Or the Barbara Streisand effect. Have you guys ever heard of that?
I've heard of the Barbara Streisand effect, but
so it's kind of like the Barbara Streisand effect, but it's this famous case of, I think it was the 60s or 70s, and India had a huge cobra problem. So they're like, well, we'll start rewarding people, kind of like how, you know, how like Florida, if you shoot an iguana, there's like a reward or like a boa constrictor, anaconda. So in India, they're like, well, we'll start having bounties on cobras, and if you kill a cobra, it's, you know, 5 rupees or whatever. And so people just started breeding cobras.
Yeah.
Oh.
And once the state realized that people were just breeding cobras, and they were like breeding them like out in a field, they'd have a pen and they would breed them. And then so the state was like, okay, well, we're not paying you for these cobras anymore. So people were just leaving those pens unattended and the cobras all got out. And so the cobra problem ended up being 5 times worse than it was at the beginning because they were incentivizing people to hunt them, to kill them.
I think that's kind of the problem in Texas when you start reading about it. Like the people are making a living on it.
There's
now.
There's a business built around it.
Yeah, they built an economy around it.
Then
I think that's part of it with Kentucky. I think if they were like, hey, we're going to make it legal to shoot these wild hogs, there'd be people who are like, you know what, maybe I could.
It's not illegal. That's the thing. They're saying don't shoot them.
I thought it was.
I dug into this afterwards. And they are asking you to not shoot them, but I could not find that it was illegal.
Yeah, I don't know. I know
they're not a native
because they don't want to protect it.
I know public land you can't hunt wild hog. If you see them, you're just supposed to call them into the Fish and Wildlife.
I may be reading it wrong, but
I don't know about private land though.
I was reading. It wasn't clear, and I felt like it was kind of ambiguous on purpose. But it said we request that you don't shoot them, not that you can't. It was interesting. So
yeah.
All right. So you're hunting private land, and a hog walks out.
I mean,
there's not many farmers that aren't going to shoot that hog.
Yeah. Right. Because they absolutely will destroy your property. But that's, I think, since they're not a native, they're not a managed game species, though. So I don't think there's any, like, technically, there's not a law around them.
I don't know.
So once they have laws around them, they got to manage them. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of getting out of my element here, but I'm pretty sure, like, once they have some kind of rules around it, then there's a management expectation. And even though they're managing it now because it's non-native, When I looked it up, I'm Googling it now. Dan's Googling it now. But when I looked it up, it literally said it was not a game species, but it was like a request to not shoot them. And I'm not telling anybody in Kentucky to go do something without researching, because what are you doing with your headphones?
It's not legal.
I didn't want to stop. Oh. Mine's like completely shut. Really? I didn't know if you guys can still hear
yours. Yeah, we're fine.
I can hear you in mine.
Yeah, I think you're recording. Braden's got some
professional.
Yeah, you know? Braden's got some weird going on with his headset there.
I couldn't hear you guys like in any way, so I just took one off.
Yeah,
like a DJ.
But with this, while Dan looks that up to see if I'm left, right, or wrong or whatever, the CWD thing is interesting though. That makes me nervous. I mean, I really hope that it is a slow. You know, it's going to come in eventually, but like hopefully it is a slow progression. I don't know what you can really do to stop it though.
No, not with how easy it's transmitted between saliva.
Yeah.
So you're right. It says Kentucky Fish and Wildlife discourages wild pig hunting and does not share wild pig location information. They say when hunted, pigs leave the area and become nocturnal, and it is illegal to hunt wild pigs at night. They say free professional trapping services to anyone experiencing damage from wild pigs. Trapping wild pigs is the most efficient method of eradication. So you're right. It does sound like they do not condone hunting it, but it's not illegal to hunt.
For the record, I'm not saying you should hunt one, because I am like one of my biggest beliefs. We should listen to our state biologist. So if that's what they say to do, I think you should. My point was, it was just interesting the way it was worded. And I'm sure our friends at Kentucky Fish and Wildlife could tell us, you know, tons about this. I always love talking to those guys. But when I read it was interesting to me that it was a request, not necessarily that it's a law.
And it's cool that they're offering free trapping services, too. I wonder if that's a thing that they do everywhere, to just be like, hey, if you're having a problem, don't kill it. We'll take care of it, and it won't exasperate the issue. Hopefully they're campaigning, like, getting the word out around, like I said, farmers. Like, if a farmer sees a pig and doesn't know, like, what's going on, like, they're going to kill that pig.
Well, it makes total sense for them to do that, though, because they're opportunists. They're going to wipe out anything on the ground, and it's not just vegetation. Right. Like, pigs will eat literally everything. The property damage, but, like, the overall habitat destruction, it goes, like, it's going to destroy everything Kentucky Fish and Wildlife works towards.
Everything I read about it, they were saying this is the worst of every invasive species that has come to America. This is by far the worst.
Oh, yeah, dude. They can take down barns. Yeah. Like, they root so hard, and they'll get in and go along the edge of a barn that they can literally pull a barn down when they get in there. If you ever, like, just Google when we're done, you can Google the, like, pig damage and what they do to, like, there's nothing left. There's absolutely nothing left. They're not a casual grazing animal. Like, it's absolutely rooted. They'll eat down past the roots. It's insane how deep they root down.
Yeah. So, sad times. Kentucky is getting the CWD, getting the wild pigs, all those things that other states have been having to deal with for a while and we've been kind of sheltered from. Because I feel like the wild pig thing, that's pretty bad in Tennessee, right? They've got a huge...
There's more. I don't know if it's bad. We've had them for a long time, because I knew someone 5 years ago that had sold a property at a certain part of Kentucky because of the pig problem that he had on his property. You know who this is. We'll talk about it later. I don't want to like say a location, because apparently they don't want you naming locations. But the other thing that you were talking about, real quick, let's do...
Oh, cell cams?
Yeah.
So they are, Kentucky Fish and Wildlife is debating, talking about not allowing cell cams, so not trail cams, but cellular cameras on public land, on wildlife.
What's the pro?
So I think, talking with Braden, and I was kind of ignorant to it, I think the pro is generally people are setting them up during their hunt to get additional information of where deer might be to inform their hunt on the day of the hunt.
I'm guessing.
I mean, they have rules around that.
That
of like,
woods trash is what people call them. Is like people just leave them out there and now it's litter.
That's true, but they sound like they're not they are not talking about banning just normal non-cellular trail cams. They say you have to put your name on it and I think your hunter identification number on the camera. But it's still fine to set them up and go out and pull cards.
It's one of those things, though, like other states. I know of one for sure that started with cell cameras and then not long after did away with all trail cameras. So it's one of those things where it's
slippery slope.
Potentially, I guess, it would be the thing. But it's like my question in that is like, is Kentucky seeing that like too many mature deer are getting killed and so we need to even the odds? Like, because those two things... Like, the litter thing, I guess maybe if it's becoming a huge problem in place, I don't hunt Kentucky, I don't know what it's like. Maybe that is a huge issue. But on the other side, like, the getting too much information to the hunter, is there so much, like, hunter participation where they're killing so many mature bucks that they're worried that, the population is in danger, and so we need to kind of back down the capability of the hunter so that less mature deer are killed? Because the cell cameras are helping people kill more big deer. Like, that for sure is happening. Like, what... Why would they be going that route other than potentially being misinformed of like, you know, oh, it's like shooting fish in a barrel or something? Because I can tell you from personal experience, I have cell cameras out on public land in Indiana and I haven't shot a giant deer in my life.
My experience with public land in Kentucky is you don't have cell service. So if you're out in the woods, you know, you're not going to be getting live updates.
That is the case on a lot of our public land.
Yeah, mine, it's like maybe it'll catch a cell tower in the middle of the night and I'll get a dump of, you know, 2 days worth of photos at once. But usually where I'm setting up trail cams, it's very
like
little.
Where I slice my oil pan.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I had to walk 4.5 miles to get picked up because there was no cell service. And that property, there's very little service. You couldn't run a cell camera.
And that's kind of the thing with the trash and litter argument is that's probably the biggest section of public land, and it's all strip mines, you know, right? So it's not like it's some pristine nature habitat. It's all roads, logging roads, and strip mined areas and stuff.
Yeah.
Now, you shouldn't leave your trash.
The strip mine, I would argue that it's cleaner than a lot of what you'd run into. I mean, it's like well maintained. I mean, I know I'm from there. I've been on the strip mines my whole life. I mean, you'll find like dumps in it every now and then, but I mean, I would argue that it's good habitat.
Yeah, I'm not saying.
I mean, we reintroduced the largest elk population east of the Mississippi on strip mines.
That's true, but what I'm saying is it's not like the rainforest. It's not like an untouched by man.
Actually, Appalachia is the most biodiverse. I'm just saying, man. Okay. Anyways, I feel like it's not the trash argument. I feel like it's the.
I don't either.
We should probably figure out what that is because like I feel like I'm arguing about something like I don't even know what.
Well,
the
I was more asking like what do you guys think are the pros and cons of this? Yeah. Was my curiosity. Here's my thing. Go ahead.
I have a question though. Why is more mature deer being shot a problem,
right?
If the numbers are staying at a sustainable rate,
is it truly a decision backed by like the wildlife biologists are saying like, man, we're just having way too many deer killed. Like we better even the odds. Like if that's something, then like, okay, I appreciate that they started with trail cameras and not compound bows or rifles or something like that. And they're like,
to me, you would just change the
tag limit.
Yeah,
yeah, right. But Kentucky's a $1 state, right?
Yeah.
If somebody's shooting an immature buck because they haven't found a nice mature buck, that seems to be more of an issue if we're going to, you know, lessen their odds of finding something mature.
I agree with you.
As far as the cons go, and I'm just speaking from what I think would happen to me if I can go out and scout and gather that information in advance, is I feel like everyone would just stack up on the obvious spots. You know, like if you can't be like, well, I wonder what about this spot or what about this spot? No activity here. Oh, activity here. If you're just having to walk around and scout or, you know, just look at maps before you go to a public area, that just seems like everyone would be kind of going to the most obvious areas.
This might be controversial. I don't know that trail cameras give you as much of an advantage as people think you do, because if I give random Joe, who's not a great hunter, a camera, just because they go set one up doesn't mean they see anything. It's like fishing. I mean, like 90% of the animals are on 10% of land, right? Like they're coming through very specific spots.
Here's what I say about that, though. If with a normal trail camera, if you go set it somewhere and you're like, I'm going to go check that before I hunt, you know, in September for you guys or whatever, like if it's out there for 2 months you don't know over that span of 2 months if you're getting deer on that camera. But if it's a cell camera, after 3 weeks, if you have zero pictures of deer, you're going to go out and say, like, there's not deer in that area. I'm going to go move it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's kind of what I was.
Yeah, but that guy, the guy that goes and moves his camera every 3 weeks is still working harder than anyone, like the average person.
Yeah, you know? I
think cell cameras give you an advantage over.
I think there's an advantage. I'm not arguing that. I'm just like, to me, I don't know. I'd be interested. I need to read more about this. I wasn't prepared for this because Dan dropped it on us like right as we were about to start, and I was like, oh, we should talk about that. But my only thing with I don't necessarily agree with people that'll hunt like a 100-acre spot, and you know, you're on one side and you see that your buck's on the other one, and you're like, oh, I'm gonna go shoot him now. Like walking up, like real time updates, I think are not fair.
What about the fact that they're only saying that it'll be illegal on public land, and on private land you can still do it? I mean, it seems to me like public land already has the reputation of being way harder than private land.
Kentucky's got a lot of stuff like that. You can bait on private land. Yeah.
Like you'd think they'd go after stuff like that before they would go after.
I just, the people. But we don't know what the cause.
What is it?
I think
it's
that's
like
the,
it's like 95% of deer are killed on private land. Why are we going? If it's
real.
Yeah, it's on Spartan Forage. I was looking at it in Indiana. It's like over 90% of the bucks killed in Indiana were killed on private. I don't know if that data is accurate or not. Yeah. I haven't been on it in a while. But
I want to know who initiated this, because if it, I'm going to probably throw up like kind of a jerky question response about this. I feel like there's been more newsworthiness of come hunt Kentucky, or I went and hunt in Kentucky. I came from out of state. I'm going to Kentucky for a hunt this year. Tags are easier to get. Is there pressure from someone that is staking claim to their state of not wanting out-of-towners to be able to come and see what's here before they come into the state and hunt, because this, hey, you're encroaching on my turf. Yeah, it's public land, but there's a lot in Kentucky, but there's not a ton. And I just wonder if there was someone that started pushing, the right people had the right kind of pull on the public land side of it and saying that they wanted to protect their spots by doing this because there's more out-of-towners. I could totally see that kicking off this whole thing.
I will say what's funny is I end up right back where Dan was making a point, but the deer population where a majority of Kentucky's public is, which I think, I don't know how much we have out west, but I mean, if you look at the public land on the east side, it's got to be the majority of the state's public.
It's
huge. And I would guess almost 50% of that's out of cell phone range. I've been through a bunch of it.
And to your point, I mean, are you thinking that an out-of-towner, maybe if they're 30 minutes, you know, right on the border of Kentucky, but if you got someone, when I did my Land Between the Lakes hunt, the guys that were there in my little area were up from Alabama. Like, do you think that
there's a lot of people come from Alabama to hunt that spot.
But do you think that they're coming up, you know,
every
a month,
few weeks,
a month earlier to set up cameras?
I have multiple friends that come from Alabama to hunt out there, and they are up there scouting at least once a month.
I feel like there is much more emphasis placed on out-of-town public land hunts. Public land hunting in general is more talked about. There's a lot of stuff on social media, bucks being taken in public
land. The lever you're pulling, I don't know if it's the right lever. And I'm kind of just riffing here, uninformed, so if I'm an idiot, I'm an idiot. But, like, why not make tags more expensive? Why not, like, the out-of-state? Like, if you're trying to do that, like, what's the actual market value of those tags? Like, raise the prices and see if people slow down on buying the tags
or maybe,
you know, change it to a different system if that's what you
maybe
like.
It's an idea that it puts out-of-towners and locals on the same playing field with no cell cameras, and maybe it's a play to get more out-of-town tags sold more money.
What I was going to say a second ago, I didn't finish my thought. So I mentioned that most of, like, all throughout Eastern Kentucky, a lot of that stuff is not going to have good cell phone range. But also, that's where, like, I think that's zone four. Yeah, it's zone four, because zone one and two, we hunt in zone one. Zone two is another really good deer section. Like, it's just, it's almost like you can shoot does until the end of time.
He literally,
like,
is.
You can
many
just keep
tags
up,
as you want.
Yeah, you just want to keep buying tags. You can shoot does. Out there, you have the limits are a lot more strict. You can't shoot a doe in gun season at all, like with archery or whatever. And the buck population is just weaker. So it's like, I could, if it's a private land versus public land, like maybe there's something that they're focused on trying to get the overall population back up. But I mean, we killed a record amount of deer last year, and I would guess it's pretty high this year.
It was. They released the numbers. Yeah, it was down a little bit, but it was,
I mean,
still
it was down
high.
Off of the peak ever though.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting level to pull when most deer, it may not be 95%. Most deer are killed on private land, objectively, for sure. That's a fact. Why wouldn't you go after baiting? Why wouldn't you go after something like that where, like, it's going to have a much bigger – maybe they don't want to have a huge impact. Maybe they're trying to have a little impact. But, like, to go and say, like, let's say it's 20% of deer are killed on public land. You're going to go over where it's, like, more difficult to find a spot and kill a big mature deer, and you're going to go try to limit that. Like, and then end of that point, next point – we promise we'll do some research and come back next week and talk about this with some information.
I would love to know what kicked it off.
Well, yeah, I got another reason.
Maybe there was too much confrontation between hunters around cameras on public land, and that's what kicked it off.
There's no way to know.
I could see that. I could see someone, you know, some really great spot, and someone setting up a trail cam on it and be like, that's my trail cam. This is my spot on the day of a quote hunt. 100%.
The Western states, a lot of them have a lot more strict rules around communication, though. Like, I might be wrong, but isn't there a state where you can't even text, like, to coordinate a move?
Like any digital tools?
Yeah, I might be wrong. I know, I'm pretty sure they regulate radios.
Yes.
But I feel like there might even be, like, you're not allowed to have any kind of communication. Like, because otherwise I could help you stalk, right? Like, think about West, like, you're making a 200-yard stalk on an animal.
Yeah.
Huh. I might be wrong. Again, we're talking really off the cuff here because this got brought up right before the show. We should have brushed up a little bit, but
we'll do a follow-up.
I'm just kind of like, if the most sensible argument to me is fair chase. Like, if, because again, I've seen people post about this on social media of, I saw that he was at my spot and I just walked up over the hill and there he was and I shot him. And it's like, that wasn't very fair chase. You know, it's like that to me, like, the real time communication of a trail camera is not fair.
But, like, the reason for fair chase is to limit the amount of deer that are killed each year. Is like
The reason for fair chase is just, like, sporting ethics to me.
I agree with the sentiment of that, but I think, like, the reason that it exists and where there's the rules around it is to limit, like, we're trying to make sure that there's a certain amount of deer killed each year. Like, you don't want to have too little, you don't want to have too many.
I think those are mutually exclusive.
But I feel like most people there,
I don't think one impacts the other. I think
fair chase doesn't impact.
I think the reason for doing one is not the reason for doing the other. Like, to me, fair chase is, like, it's the right thing to do. It's the ethical thing to do to give that animal a fair chance. All of the regulations aside for how many deer we need or not, like, fair chase is always fair chase.
Yeah.
And then the regulation side of it is like, okay, this is what we need to do to maintain a healthy habitat, to, like, have numbers that are appropriate for our habitat. Healthy ecosystem is what I meant.
But them getting involved to regulate something for the reason of fair chase doesn't really make sense unless there's a reason to regulate the deer herd, right?
Like, I don't know.
I think when you're getting into ethical issues, I'm just making this number off the top of my head, but I would imagine 90% of the people that are using cell cams are not using them for live updates during their hunt. And I don't. And I don't think you do either. You're not checking cell cams.
I mean, up until last week, actually this hunt I was on, I realized I needed to change my updates because of this challenge, because I've never had two cameras. And I'm usually sitting over my camera that's out there. And this is the first time when I was out there this weekend, I got a notification. I was like, oh, I wonder if something's at that camera. And I was like, oh, that's bad. Like, I don't want to do that, you know?
And as far as being a new hunter, and if you want to go from the angle of trying to get more people to get into hunting and, you know, increase the hunter base, for me, setting up cell cams and seeing deer on camera and having an unsuccessful hunt would be much different than not having a cell cam or a trail cam and having an unsuccessful hunt. Because at least with the cell cam, I know that there are deer in the woods and I just need to get a little bit better as a hunter, where if I don't have that information that there's even deer there, it'd be much harder to really get into the sport if if you just have no intel to go off of.
I want to clarify, when I said mutually exclusive, I meant the reason for making the decision. I think your point was that one has an impact on the other, right? Like that, yes. Which is totally true.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Just
I was sitting here like.
I know. My thing was like, I think you make decisions for supporting and then there's decisions for habitat and one could impact the other, but I think like you make the decision on its own accord, yeah. If that makes sense.
Okay.
Well, I just love how we're like, let's have a, we usually do these in the morning. We're doing it at the end of the day. And we're like, well, this will be a quick 30-minute podcast.
47 minutes in.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
it's a good topic. I want to figure out the motivations for it. I think that'll really help us all.
Dan brought this up right as we sat down. And we're like, don't say another word. We'll hash it out on the podcast. What we hashed out is we're all dumb.
Bunch of uninformed idiots.
Bunch of uninformed idiots.
Well, we all have
yet another podcast where people just ramble.
And we all have totally different experiences. You know, I'm public land. You're public land-ish. You're mostly private land. You're very private land. So it's all totally different scenarios as far as there's not one way for everyone to hunt. You know, the person that, like you, who's the property you hunt is 20 minutes away from your house is very different than me, where I'm only allowed to be there one weekend and it's 3 hours away.
Yeah. I mean, so. I've hunted all of these scenarios and can totally empathize with all of it. So, yeah, we'll get informed before the next one and come back with some actual insights into this. But we'd love to hear what you guys think. Should, you know, how do you feel? I feel like we have a lot of Eastern States guys and gals that listen to this. So let us know what you think.
I thought of a nice little part-time side gig that if they get rid of cell cameras on public land.
They're getting rid of drones.
Wait a second. I'm going to start a business running card cameras where I just go out and pull cards and send them to people.
On that point real quick of like regulating this, a lot of times the reason that traditional trail cameras follow the cell camera thing is it's difficult to tell a lot of times like on the face that's a cell camera, that's a traditional camera. And so since it gets difficult to regulate, the problem now becomes like, is that a cell camera or is that a traditional camera? And then they just do away with it all because they've all agreed on this issue with cell cameras. You really can't go back on that. So now you have to go the next step and remove. So keep that in mind when you're thinking about the fair chase and all this stuff.
The big-ass antenna doesn't give it away on the...
It's, look it up. There's articles you can read.
Are there some that don't?
Yeah, this is a legitimate... I'm not out of my butt here. I don't know what state, but this is a legitimate reason for that.
Come back to Jacob's idea. The more I think about it, what if you had a business and any teenagers looking for a side hustle and you own the cameras and for a monthly fee, you just text me a pin of where you want the camera to go and I go set up the camera for you. I'll pull the card for you.
Yeah. That's what I was meaning. Like you're leasing my cameras and I'm pulling the
cards.
That's
like it's like kind of like the Uber of trail cameras.
Yeah. It's such a good business idea.
Copyright.
Copyright. To incorporate that.
Goober.
Dude.
That's almost as good as blowpoke.
Oh, man. All right. Let us know.
Joke on a podcast. Dan just did an inside joke on a podcast.
Yeah, we're going to leave it there.
For four people.
I don't want to explain it. If you let us know what you guys think about cell cameras or all of our any part of this miserable conversation of just ongoing fishing, duck hunting, and deer hunting failures. You got Brad, Dan, Jacob, and Braden on this show. Go to Go Wild, hit plus sign, log time, outdoor log time podcast, and then you'll find us there with Uncensored. Thank you again to gunbroker.com for sponsoring the show. All right, guys, we're out.
Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.